Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the DPietro and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN. This is DPietro and Rothenberg.
You're getting paid millions of dollars to be a professional athlete, and then there are moments when you're struggling where it's like you forgot how to play.
Peralta hits one deep to center. Every which way but loose, and it gets past Hicks.
Like, I remember sitting in my stall midway through a game, like after a second period, and being awful and thinking to myself, I don't know how I'm going to make a save. Like, I'm trying. I want to.
I just couldn't get the ball in the hole. I wanted to, but I just couldn't do it.
This DPietro and Rothenberg.
That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, continuing along on this Tuesday morning, Pat O'Keefe in for Dave, along with Rick DiPietro here on 98.7 ESPN New York. Open up the phone lines in a couple minutes, 1-800-919-3776. After a tough baseball night in New York, and we haven't had a ton of those this season, more so lately for the Yankees than the Mets, but the Yankees lose to the Rays 4-0 and are shut out for the second consecutive game. And the Mets lose the first of a four-game series in Atlanta 13-1. Some injury concerns with Carlos Carrasco, who left the game early. In fact, Rick, let's get right into today's New York Mets injury report. It is brought to you by Total Orthopedic Spine and Sports Medicine. Before the game, they got the news that Luis Guillorme, who's been such a spark plug for this team all season, could miss 4 to 6 weeks with a moderate left groin strain. And then Carrasco is scheduled to undergo an MRI today. He left last night's game with left side tightness. Catcher Tomas Nito is sidelined with a non-injury related illness as well. So James McCann, the starting catcher for the time being. That is the Mets injury report brought to you by Total Orthopedic Spine and Sports Medicine. Total Ortho Express is Long Island's premier orthopedic immediate care where no appointment is needed. After all, time doesn't heal wounds, they do. So the Mets last night, Atlanta jumps on them early, Rick, and then they have the rain delay, and then Atlanta jumps on them late, and the Mets have been obviously playing as well as any team in Major League Baseball right now, but the Braves, very difficult to shake right now, just 4.5 games behind the Mets, 3 games to go in this series. The Mets do have their two big guns, Scherzer and DeGrom, pitching on Wednesday and Thursday, respectively. But again, I think last night, two things. Number one, it's a bad game that you move on from because this team has been so good. But number two, it is a reminder that the team that is chasing you in the National League East is still very much a threat in the defending World Series champs.
Yeah, and I think you get an idea how well the Mets have played when you see what, you know, outside of, again, that 5-game series, the Mets took 4 or 5 of that. The Braves haven't lost since that series. They've won 7 straight. So this is a really good baseball team you're talking about with the pedigree, you know, the championship pedigree. You know what it is, too, though, Pat, is the Carrasco injury. Again, I know Buck was talking about how he was throwing, you know, he's throwing during the rain delay, but he comes out, and now we got the MRI of the side. Luis Guillorme's been, he's been so good for us. I mean, he's one of the best defensive players in Major League Baseball. He's been much better offensively than people thought he was capable of being. So that's a big loss. But you kind of realize how fragile this thing is. Because, like, barring injury, like, this is one of the best teams in baseball. Like, as good as Atlanta is, like, my team fully loaded, I think is one of the best teams in baseball. And you mentioned the fact that, you know, we're going to see our two big guns in Scherzer and DeGrom in this series. So that's kind of, you know, gives you this, you know, this this level of confidence that even if you lost this, and let's just get rid of that one because that was, I mean, that was a debacle last night. But you know, it gives you this level of confidence that, you know, you're still going to split the series because ball in their hands, you'll love your chances. But that's the only thing in my mind that really is going to stand in this Mets team way is the injuries. And hopefully this isn't too serious to Carrasco.
Well, just yesterday, and they do have the two big guns, but the three guns behind the two big guns have also been really good as well. You know, just yesterday I had Chris Bassitt in the bullpen. You know, you had him in the rotation for the playoffs, but regardless of where you have him, the fact that we're talking about how much starting pitching depth this team has, the fact that you would have to, if everybody's healthy, take one healthy, really good starter and put him in the bullpen for the postseason just shows how much depth they have. And then one day later, one of those pitchers leaves the game early, potentially goes down for a period of time, and all of a sudden, the depth isn't looking as strong. And the division race for the Mets and the Braves is a real thing. Because with the new playoff format this year and the third wild card team that has been added, right now where the Mets stand, if they finish as the division champions in the NL East, they get a bye and they move right on to the NLDS. The Atlanta Braves right now would have to play a 2 out of 3 series against, right now it would be against the Phillies, who are a half a game ahead of the Padres. So that's the difference for the Mets. You either go to the NLDS and can set up your rotation with Scherzer and DeGrom at the top of it, or you've got to roll the dice in a 2 out of 3 against the Phillies or the Padres, or even if you want to throw the Brewers in there, teams that, look, in a 2 out of 3 series, anything can happen.
Yeah, anything can happen, but more importantly, it just makes the task of getting to the World Series that much more difficult. And when you've had the kind of season that the Mets have had, and more importantly, the kind of lead the Mets have had over the Atlanta Braves, like that would hurt to for some reason not end up winning the NL East. Because that is, like you just mentioned, as far as setting your rotation, getting guys ready to rock and roll for the, you know, the best of five. As much as I think, you know, DeGrom and Scherzer, top two, you know, in a 3-game series, yeah, I mean, that's fine. We'll win that series. It just makes it that much more difficult now going into the DS when you could have avoided that.
Yeah, plus if you win the division, you're guaranteed to go into the DS because you're one of the top two teams in the National League right now. So the division race is certainly, and these next three games are going to go a long way to that. If the Mets can come out of this 4-game series with a split, and to your point, with those two guys pitching on Wednesday and Thursday, you like their chances of getting a split, then no blood this week. You're 5.5, and you've ticked 4 more games off the schedule, and you feel good about yourselves going forward. Depending on what happens with Carrasco, because like you said, that's really the only thing that could trip these guys up. Guillorme's been such an important part, and Carrasco's been such an important part, and within the span of 24 hours, you lose both of them.
Yeah, this is what I was trying to tell you yesterday. Like, let's go. Like, bubble wrap these guys up. Let's get to the playoffs. Stop this. I've seen enough regular season baseball. My team is ready.
I'm
not going through the Yankees swoon right now.
Yeah, exactly. On the other end of the spectrum, a team that doesn't appear to be ready for prime time right now is the Yankees. And they were, think about this, the Yankees, if you go back to Friday night in Fenway Park, when they lose in 10 innings to the Red Sox, blowing another late lead, the Yankees are an Isaiah Kiner-Falefa home run over the Green Monster and Isaiah Kiner-Falefa squeeze bunt away from not having won a game in about a week. I mean, that's the only game they've won in a week because of two, let's call them freak things that you rarely see. An IKF homer and an implemented squeeze bunt in the ninth inning of a game. That's how much this team is scuffling right now. They're shut out on Sunday against the Sox in a game that took about 45 minutes. They're shut out last night against the Rays. The Yankees lineup right now includes one human who you really are afraid of. And Aaron Judge can't homer every game. He can't get a hit every game. But if you can figure out a way to get Aaron Judge out, you can put your feet up until he comes back up again. It's unbelievable how much they're struggling right now.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the back-to-back shutouts. I mean, they've been shut out in 4 of their last 9 games. They've scored 8 runs in their last 6. So, you know, offensively, they're not getting the job done. Here's the one thing, though, and I get what you're saying. You know, the IKF home run and then the the squeeze bunt. But, I mean, they were Clay Holmes blowing another save away from winning the series, too. I mean, you could also make that argument. But, again, I mean, they're finding ways, different ways, to lose games that they normally would have won. Right? Like, I mean, that's where they're at right now. Like, they're finding new ways to lose these games. Last night it was Aaron Hicks making an awful play in center field that ends up costing them a run. Because Gerrit Cole was good. Gerrit Cole gave you a good start. And then going into as bad as you had been offensively, still with the hope going into the ninth inning that, okay, we're only down a run. Let's find a way. Let's find a way to tie this thing up, and we'll see what happens. And your bullpen doesn't get the job done. And now it's 4-0, and there's no chance. No chance in the ninth at all.
I mean, there was no chance when it was 1-0.
It felt that way, but at least at 1-0, right. It's like, okay, you know, maybe we have a chance. But 4-0, there was zero chance.
Well, you really, and this illustrates Judge's value if you're talking about the MVP conversation. But it also illustrates just his importance to this team right now, because when the Yankees get the leadoff runner on in the eighth inning down 1-0, and Judge made good contact, sharply hit ball up the middle that was turned into a double play. As soon as that runner was erased, and as soon as the Rays got through Judge in the batting order, you really, even at 1-0, had the sense that game was over, because he's the only guy right now that you're afraid of in that lineup.
Yeah, and I think guys in that lineup are feeling that too. Like, I mean, and it's funny, when you don't hit, it feels like, you know, your team has no life. It's just there's a lethargic nature to kind of your team, because that's what it's all about. I mean, it's all about scoring runs, and when you're not hitting, it just doesn't look good. And you know, RJ was texting us last night. We had talked about this, just not non-competitive at bats, and then, you know, like I took some notes. Seventh inning, like Trevino and IKF had no chance against Thompson. Like they weren't overly competitive at bats. But I think guys in the, like, you saw how Rizzo reacted when he, I mean, listen, I don't know how people saw it. I think Rizzo knew exactly what he was doing, and that's something that usually doesn't get called. It gets called, he strikes out, but he, like, you could see it. Like, the way he reacted to that, everyone in that clubhouse is feeling it. Like, they know somebody has to do something. It can't be Aaron Judge every single night. Like, somebody has to find a way to contribute. And that puts a lot of pressure on these guys, because that's, for a lot of guys in this lineup, that's not something that they're used to doing or being asked to do. Like outside of Judge, with no LeMahieu, no Stanton, there's not a lot of guys in that line. There's no guys right now in that lineup that can carry it, that are, you know, capable of doing that. So it puts that much more pressure on Judge, that much more pressure on the starting pitching, that much more pressure on the bullpen. And then to get the news last night, like I thought. Like, I had originally thought that Stanton was pretty, it felt like he was close. And then listening to him talk yesterday, it didn't sound like he was right around the corner yet with his Achilles.
Well, especially his injury history, too. Every time he seems like he's out for 2 weeks, you just double it right off the bat. And that's what this is going to end up being, at least a month. So no Stanton, no LeMahieu, and no Matt Carpenter. And then you're not getting anything right now from Gleyber Torres. You're not getting anything from Josh Donaldson. Obviously, you're not getting anything from Aaron Hicks. August 1st, the Yanks beat Seattle, Rick, 7-2. And they were the first team in baseball to reach 70 wins. I got SportsCenter on here. The Dodgers just won their 80th game. So the Dodgers are now the first team in baseball to 80 wins. Yanks were the first team to 70 wins. Yanks have 72 wins now. That was 2.5 weeks ago. They've won two games in 2.5 weeks. So the question I have is, at what point do you become more concerned than what the statement has been, that this is just a rough patch? Are we there yet? Are we there at the end of this week?
Well, I think it's more than a patch. Like, I mean, I don't... They weren't as good as... The reality is they weren't as good as the start of the season would suggest. Like, I mean, 52-18, like they weren't that good. They weren't, you know, the team that was going to set the, you know, the regular season wins record. And they're not as bad as they're playing right now. I mean, I don't think they're this bad, but it's starting to, become more than a rough patch, man. I mean, you're getting, like, they were throwing up some stats last night after the game with, you know, they've lost 10 of their last 12. They're 11-21 in their last 32. Like, I mean, this is more than a little bump at the moment. And they're going to need some reinforcements. They're going to need some help here. Like, who would have thought that Matt Carpenter would end up being this big of a loss for the Yankees? Right? Like, I mean...
You sure it wasn't Joey Gallo?
Well, listen, criticize Brian Cashman all you want. But, like, you got Matt Carpenter for nothing.
Yep.
And now we're sitting here talking about what a critical loss he is for the Yankees.
Guy was available for the picking, turned into your number three hitter. DiPietro and Rothenberg is presented by Progressive Insurance, 1-800-919-3776. Jared in Morganville has a take on Aaron Judge. Jared, how you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Awesome. So, with all these guys slumping, does it get in their head at all seeing a guy like Aaron Judge perform as well as he is?
Yes. Yeah, because, I mean, it just a slump period gets in your head, and it only gets magnified when you're playing in New York on a team that has World Series aspirations. Because you want to help. I mean, you want to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And you press, and baseball's the sport, man. The harder you try in baseball is, I mean, the less productive you are. Like, that's the problem when you get in one of these slumps in baseball, because you're grinding so hard, you're trying so hard, and it seems like the harder you work, the less success you're having.
And it's also the sport where you can't hide. I mean, baseball, no. Aaron Hicks gets as many at-bats as Aaron Judge. You know, basketball, if you're struggling, your shot's not falling, you can hide in the corner, you could veer the offense somewhere else. You can't do that in baseball.
No one will find you, too. That's the best. That is... Having played baseball all my life, that's the one thing that is always consistent. When you're struggling, it'll always find you. You can't hit. Now all of a sudden you're like, okay, you're trying to go over. You're in the field going through your bat, and then sure as hell, the boom, next ball right at you. Like Aaron Hicks can't hit, and of course the one thing that's his saving grace is he's good defensively. And it's a horrendous defensive play last night that ends up costing them. Not to mention the double play with the bases loaded.
Not to mention that. His fourth time this season grounding into a double play with the bases loaded. Nestor Cortez on the mound for the Yankees tonight against Jeffrey Springs as they host the Rays 7:05 at Yankee Stadium. Taijuan Walker pitches for the Mets tonight against Charlie Morton. Mets and Braves in Atlanta at 7:20.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro and Rothenberg podcast.
And welcome aboard.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Mike Tannenbaum in about 10 minutes. Pat O'Keefe in for Dave on this Tuesday morning alongside Rick. I need you to help clear something up for me, Rick.
What do you need?
I need to get inside the mind of a top-level athlete, because Kevin Durant continues to confuse me. If you follow his Twitter account and the amount of times that he claps back at criticism, you would think that there's nobody in the world who cares more about what other people think than Kevin Durant does. Yet all of his actions regarding his career, especially this summer, requesting the trade from the Brooklyn Nets and then demanding the trade from the Brooklyn Nets, and then giving this reported ultimatum that it's either him or the combination of Sean Marks and Steve Nash. If you're concerned about what people think about you, those are not actions that are consistent with having people think that you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, that's the interesting part about Kevin Durant, is And he is very active on Twitter. And the more people you ask about that, the more that, you know, just say that he enjoys it. Like, it's something, you know, that he enjoys doing. But you're right. Like, even going back to when he first made the move to Golden State, so they win the two championships. He's, you know, two-time finals MVP. And then, you know, stories start to leak out how he's mad at Rich Kleiman. And, you know, this was a mistake. He didn't. You know, he didn't get the kind of credit that he thought he was, you know, he deserved, and people were looking at it like it was the easy way out and it was a soft move, which I never thought. Like, why not go play on, you know, if they want you, why not go play on, you know, a great team like that that's well run? Like, I would have done the same thing. And now to be at this point where, you know, it felt like you have a perfect situation in Golden State where, hell, I mean, who knows how many championships you could have won. And if you keep reeling off championships, at what point, and you're the best player on the team, at what point do they just say, hey, you know, forget that whole conversation about being the easy way out. This guy's, oh, you know, he's part of one of the greatest teams in the history of the NBA. And all that other nonsense kinds of fade, all that other nonsense starts to fade away. And he said, no, I want to go to my own spot, and I want to be the guy. I want to be the face of the team. Steph was that guy for Golden State. I want to be that guy and in Brooklyn. And I'm going to hitch my wagons to Kyrie. And we're going to make it work. Coach? No. We don't need a Kenny Atkinson? No, we don't need Kenny Atkinson. We don't even need a coach. Kyrie will coach one game. I'll coach one game. We'll make it work. And it has been a disaster of epic proportions. And I think the most confusing part for me, and I would suspect you, is you leave a perfect situation because everyone thought it was the easy way out and you didn't get the credit. So now you go to a situation where it's all on you. Whatever you want, they were going to do, and you would be judged on how it turned out. And didn't work. You won one playoff series, the whole Kyrie thing, James Harden. Like, we all know what went into it. And then the first thing that you do is have it leak out that the two teams that you want to play for are the Phoenix Suns and the Miami Heat. Like, you just got done complaining that people, you know, were criticizing you for taking the easy way out, and the two teams that you come out with initially were the best team in the West and the best team in the East were the two teams. Like, it's just it's hard to make it all make sense, what his thought process is. And then the other team is the Celtics, the team that you're the only team that got swept in the entirety of the NBA playoffs. The only team that got swept was you by the Boston Celtics, and now the team, because you'd like to play with Marcus Smart, is the Boston Celtics?
Well, he's done that before. That's his MO. You lose to a team in the playoffs, and then you jump to that team the next year. He did that in 2016 when they lost to the Golden State Warriors when he was in Oklahoma City.
But it's inconsistent with what you're telling us that you want.
The entire thing is inconsistent. My question is, and I don't know Rich Kleiman. I've never spoken with him. I do know that for the most part, they have a strong partnership. They have a business partnership, and they've done very well together as a team. But my question is, who's advising Kevin Durant? Like, who is advising this man?
I think he's just doing it. I mean, I think Rich is part of that. But, I mean, I just think he's chasing something that I don't know if it's... Like, he's trying to take this... He's trying to you know, follow the whole LeBron James kind of playbook, right? Where, you know, LeBron James didn't feel like he was set up best in Cleveland to win a championship. Took that team as far as he could take it. Didn't trust ownership and how they were building it. So, you know, he gets together with D Wade and Chris Bosh on a team that's well run by Pat Riley in Miami, and they win the couple championships. And then, you know, decides, I'm going to go back to Cleveland. And that was I think anyone will tell you, I think you probably feel the same way, that of his four titles, the most meaningful title he gets the most credit for is the Cleveland championship.
No question.
So I think Durant thought the same thing. Okay, I went to, didn't get the credit I wanted. I'll go build my own thing. I'll win one or however many in Brooklyn or wherever it is, and I will get that same kind of payoff that LeBron got from the Cleveland one, and I'll feel satisfied, and then we can continue to just build from there. And it hasn't worked out. I just don't know why your default mechanism, like his default mechanism now, would be, okay, so now I'm gonna revert. Back to what I did with Golden State, and I was unhappy with that decision, and yet I'm going to now make that same decision.
By the way, I thought he should have gone back to Golden State this offseason.
Well, they have the pieces to do it, right?
They do. And I think Golden State would do that. Because you know what they're concerned about in Golden State?
Winning.
They're concerned about winning championships. They would take him back if it made sense. And I think it actually would make sense. But to your point, like every decision he makes is the opposite of how he wants to be perceived. And one of the things for me it boils down to, he is not LeBron James.
No.
LeBron James was a franchise unto himself. LeBron James went to 8 consecutive NBA finals. Kevin Durant is not LeBron James.
No, and that's the thing, too, though. I think that's what frustrates a lot of people now in the NBA, because I'm all about player empowerment, player movement. Like, if you're a free agent and you don't like your situation, there's only a finite amount of time that we have to do this. So if you want to move on to a better place where you can trust the people in charge and you got a better chance to win, I'm all for that. And that's what LeBron's done. Like, LeBron James has consistently done that. Like, I'm gonna sign a short-term deal. If this isn't working out the way I want to work it to work out, I'll move on, and I have that kind of leverage. But everywhere he goes, he's delivered a championship. He goes to Miami, he wins two. Comes back to Cleveland, brings a championship. Decides he wants to be in L.A. now as a free agent, wins a championship. Like, the whole notion that these guys now are going to start signing long-term deals, and then not even a year into his new extension decide, you know what, now, the whole Kyrie thing, I didn't like how that worked out. Oh, yeah, you fired one of the assistant coaches that was my guy and didn't call me. I didn't like that, so I want out now. And I'm going to follow the whole, I'm going to ask you politely for a trade. You're going to say, yeah, we'd rather not trade you. We can't get value. Then I'm going to tell you, hey, I'm not playing here unless you get rid of Sean Marks and Steve Nash. Oh, that's not going to work? Okay, how about this? I'll retire if you don't trade me. Like, how many more? There's not many more cards you can play now at this point.
No. What else you got? And he clapped back at those reports that he was going to retire. He said on Twitter, I don't plan on retiring anytime soon, and then went on to say stuff.
Why not just say it, though?
Grow up.
Like, we have, as athletes, and listen, Kevin Durant's on a whole different level, but you have every opportunity. Like, if Kevin Durant picked up the phone, he could go on First Take, any show he wanted to. He's got social media, anything he wanted to do, and say, hey, listen, here's the deal. Like, just clarify. Like, if you don't like people speculating, just, like, here's the deal. For X, Y, these are the reasons why it hasn't worked out in Brooklyn. I don't want to be here anymore, and I would like to be traded. As opposed to now, everyone's just in limbo. Like, you're one of the biggest names in all of sports, and we're trying to figure out, first of all, why you want to leave, because it feels like they've done everything and anything that you wanted. And now, like, where are you at? Like, is there a chance you'll come back? If that's not the case, I mean, I don't know. Like, you just leave it open for everyone to speculate, because everyone's interested. I mean, you said this before the show, and I thought it was a great idea when Ray was asking you about the NBA schedule. And I think you're dead on. Like, you don't think the NBA wants to figure out where the hell Kevin Durant's going to end up and how that's going to affect how they schedule nationally televised games?
Yep.
Like, if Kevin Durant goes back to Brooklyn and Kyrie's in Brooklyn and Ben Simmons is in Brooklyn, all right. I mean, there's a lot of people for a bunch of different reasons are going to want to watch that. Like, those are games you would schedule for national television. If Kyrie's gone and KD's gone, how many people want to watch Ben Simmons play for, is that like a game that people are dying to? No, they don't care about that. Like, that's like, he's that important.
Well, they're not playing on Christmas right now, and then we'll see where they go from there.
Thanks for listening to the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast.
I'll give it to you whenever you want it.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at DR on ESPN.
Mike Tannenbaum. Mike, how you doing this morning?
Yeah, I've been listening to the show all morning on the ESPN app, and there's just something about the show today that just sounds great, harmonious. Can't quite put my finger on it, but there's something about the show today that just stands out from the rest of them.
Go away, this show dies.
Mike,
I'll be speaking with you about representation after the show, Mike, if that's okay with you.
Sure, we can talk.
Hey, Mike, let's start with Zach Wilson. How much, and the best case scenario obviously has him back 2 to 4 weeks, and we'll learn more after the surgery today. How much, even in the best case scenario, is this going to set him back?
Well, I think he would still have to take, meaningful time off. And if you're the Jets, like, his health long-term is paramount. So, if it's 2 to 4 weeks, look, I'm not a doctor. I don't know the details of this injury, but I got to just be thinking about long-term with him. And look, if he misses two games or three games 10 years from now, that's not going to matter. But to make sure that, you know, a meniscus fully heals, you know, that's what's consequential for the future of this franchise.
Let me ask you a question, though, Mike. So I'm a Jets fan. You know that. And the moves that Joe Douglas made during the offseason, his draft, all the excitement surrounding this team, it feels like Zach Wilson going into year two, there were some expectations that he would make a jump and this team would start to win some games. It felt like there was a little bit of pressure on Joe Douglas to start winning some games. So how do you handle this? Like, say Zach Wilson misses the first, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of the season because you're taking your time, you don't want to rush him, and for some reason Joe Flacco steps in and is playing really well, offense is humming, and they're 2-1 after 3 weeks. How do you handle it? Because, I mean, you're still trying to prove to guys in that locker room that you're trying to win, and it's probably good for Coach Sala to win. How would you handle that?
Yeah, the best players play, and there's no excuses. You know, I had the great fortune in my career, guys, of working for Coach Parcells at the Jets, and one of his mentors was a guy named Al Davis, the late, great owner of the Raiders. And I just remember one of the things that Coach Parcells talked about all the time that Al Davis used to say is, no one cares. And what he means by that is, in football, you start with 90 players, and things are going to happen, and you either win or you go home, and nobody cares. So Zach Wilson gets hurt, Mekhi Becton gets hurt, everyone's going to have the injuries, and nobody cares. So for the Jets, it's the next guy up, and you know they have Joe Flacco, and the expectation is him or Mike White should go in there and play good football.
Mike, along those lines, I'm watching the Giants preseason opener against the Patriots and Daniel Jones out there for the first two series, and it looks very similar to the Daniel Jones offense of the last couple of seasons. And then Tyrod Taylor comes in and looks really good, and I understand it's the backups or the backups to the backups, but for the first time it got me thinking, and we know Jones's contract status going forward. Is Jones, what's the likelihood that Jones doesn't finish the season as the Giants starting quarterback?
I was actually encouraged the way he played. If Galladay holds on to that pass, I think we're looking at, you know, a different outcome for how that series may finish up. So, look, Daniel Jones has a massive opportunity, and he needs to play in 17 games to be worthy of another contract, and he needs to turn over the ball a lot less. So if he does those two things, then I think he has a chance to be there a long time. And Brian Daboll has done a great job of developing quarterbacks. So if Daniel Jones is ever going to do it now in his career, I think it's going to be right now.
See, this is what I'm dealing with, Mike. I get rid of Dave for a week, so I have a nice, you know, nice week off of Dave, and I got to deal with this maniac. You hear how negative this guy is? he's a very tough critic.
Rick, he must have been watching a different game than I was, because I thought Daniel Jones played pretty good.
I didn't think he was that bad either. I thought he was
good.
They
go down to the 20-yard line and installs. All right, it's Galladay.
Well, Kenny Galladay stinks. Will you stop it, please?
Right.
So Mike Tannenbaum joins us here in the show. Mike, as far as just expectations for you with Brian Daboll in his first year, like, what do you NFC East isn't great. I mean, let's face it. What do you, when you look at this Giants team, what are your honest expectations for them?
Okay, let's go back a year ago to Nick Sirianni. Nick Sirianni inherits a team in Philadelphia that has more dead money, meaning there's more salary cap charges for players not on their team than anybody because they trade Carson Wentz. They make the playoffs. So they saw in their division firsthand that there is no such thing as a long-term rebuild. Like, they can win right now. I believe in Brian Daboll. I think he will make Daniel Jones better, and there's no reason why they can't be competitive this year. And I think Saquon Barkley, from a fantasy standpoint, I think he's going to have a really good year when you think about all the running backs that have thrived in Brian Daboll's offense, not only rushing but also catching the ball.
All right, let me write that down. So what are you saying? So if I said this, theoretically, if I had the fifth pick in a new fantasy league, would Saquon be someone that you would consider?
Absolutely, because I think he's going to, again, I think he's going to be productive this year, and I think it's going to be way more than just running the ball. I think he will be productive in the receiving game.
Hey, Mike, how's Trey Lance look to you? You're hearing a lot of good things. Obviously, it's a not an easy move to make going to the NFC Championship and then replacing the quarterback who got you there with a second-year guy without a ton of experience. But how's he looking to you so far?
I'm encouraged. I think there's going to be some growing pains just from a standpoint that I think Peter King had this in his column yesterday. I think he's thrown 389 passes since high school, which is really remarkable. The quarterback position takes time. We already talked about Zach Wilson. We talked about Daniel Jones. And I really like Trey Lance. long term, but I don't think it happens overnight.
So where does I can't wait to watch you on Get Up. I think you look fantastic on television. What do you think ends up happening with Jimmy G?
You know, Rick, after your career ends as a radio host, I think being a media critic is a smooth and natural transition for you.
I figured. I'm always looking for new jobs.
Who'd you ask me about?
I asked you about jobs because this is what happens to you. I start praising you and tell you how handsome you are. And
well,
how
he's
you are
talking
TV.
About another handsome guy.
And I'm talking about Jimmy G. Where does he end up?
I think the Jets or the Browns should be interested, assuming that Deshaun Watson's suspension gets increased over the next couple of days. I think the Browns have a really good team. I like Jacoby Brissett, but, guys, you're one hit away from playing Josh Dobbs or Josh Rosen. So I would really take a long look at him if I was the Browns. And then, likewise, if I'm the Jets, knowing that your offensive coordinator has a familiarity with Jimmy G, I think he gives you a better option than Mike White or Joe Flacco, assuming that, that Zach Wilson's out for a period of time.
Mike, we know you have to do Get Up. We appreciate the time. Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. Really appreciate it. And keep up the great work, because I just think this show, for whatever reason, just stands out harmoniously. And it's a great lesson this morning.
There is something different about it. I appreciate you saying that.
All right, guys. Thanks.
All right, Mike. I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. I've been trying to figure it out myself.
Hey, Pat, just a question. I don't know if you've heard this. I know you're a very busy guy. Did you ever hear Mike T fart on the radio?
They had 35 runs, 33 passes.
Oh, yeah, that happened. That happened.
I'm glad I've heard it now.
Oh, yeah, this is why he feels a way about Dave. Dave brought it right up.
Shocking.
We had whole Fartgate. It was a big, big story. Do you like that he's not calling the plays, or do you think at some point we could see Brian Daboll take back control of that?
You know, Rick, that's a great question. A lot's been made about what's going on with the Patriots and play calling.
See that? RJ, correct. Am I up 1-0 on Dave right now as far as great questions are concerned?
Dave has 0, and he will not add to it this week because he's not here.
And I have 1, right?
Maybe you do have 2. You do have at least 1, yeah.
Yes.
That's a good one. I like that. That was a good one.
Getting fantasy info?
Yeah,
you guys are all in trouble. Yeah, this league
Saquon at number 5 might be a stretch.
No, of course.
No, do it.
No, I'm not going to do it. I was going to ask the question, and you're like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. You should do it. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to do the opposite of that, and I'm going to win this league, and you're never going to hear the end of it.
I'm not even sure he'll be available as 5. I would trade up. I would give up some picks.
Some capital?
Yeah, make a move up.
I've seen the names on this league. It's a hack league. I don't know why I joined it. I'm all stressed out. I'm already looking for assistant GMs.
When is this draft?
The end of August.
Yeah, a couple of weeks.
Well, you got some time.
2 weeks away, and you're already freaking out.
I'm not freaking out. I'm just doing my due diligence, buddy.
You're speaking fast. You're all high strung. You're freaking out.
Relax. I follow your Twitter handle. I see how you are with the Cowboys. You're a nervous wreck.
At least it matters.
This doesn't. At least I have control of this. You have no control of the Cowboys.
Ray looks down his nose immensely at those that play fantasy football.
Is that right?
So all of us, basically, yeah.
All right.
Coming from the guy who Tinder Tom, who just plays fantasy lovemaking.
Again, where does this come from?
I have no idea.
So Mike T's not ready to cast aside Daniel Jones like I am, apparently.
God, you are tough on Daniel Jones, man.
Well, come on. I mean, am I the only one?
No, you're not the only one. I think there's a lot of Giants fans.
Is he the answer?
No, but is Tyrod Taylor the answer?
You play Tyrod Taylor this year, you see what you have around Jones. I think Taylor takes over by midseason.
Okay, but here's my question to you, though. Is what does that get you exactly?
It gets you a look at the rest of the personnel on your roster. Because I don't think you can get a... If Jones doesn't play well... And if he's in and out of the lineup and he's not playing consistently, then it's just time to move on. Taylor's at least a professional, competent, proven quarterback. Top 20 quarterback, top 25 quarterback.
Has he been durable?
He's ran into a lot of bad luck.
Well, okay. I mean, he got stabbed by his doctor. he's the guy that you sign when you have a young quarterback. That's ready to just take his job at any moment.
I know. It's a tough spot. I mean, I guess it's a living, right?
Well, of course. I mean, are you kidding me?
Baker Mayfield, Justin Herbert.
Poor guy, too.
Was he there before Josh Allen?
Yeah, he was all set to take that job, too. And he gets a lung collapse by his team doctor. Oh,
he's,
my goodness.
Ugh.
That's
then,
bad luck.
Well, and then just to bring the comparison back to, you know, Wilson and Jones, when Herbert went in, you knew within a quarter that Taylor wasn't going to see the field again.
Yeah, see, that's the thing, though. Yeah, that's what skews this whole thing. Because, I mean, between fantasy, like, football is a behemoth. And it's not like, you know, baseball is so, we're sitting here talking about the Yankees, and we'll all, like, Mets fans will watch every Mets game, and Yankees fans will watch every Yankees game. But it's such a regional sport. Like, yeah, you'll see highlights, but you're not, like, unless you're playing fantasy baseball, like, you don't really have a grasp of kind of what's going on in the entirety of the league. With football, with fantasy football and everything, like, red zone, like, you're dialed in, and you get, like, you're a Giants fan, you're a Jets fan, but you're still paying attention to what's going on in the league, and you're watching Justin Herbert step on the field and be awesome. Or you turn, I mean, you turn on the NFL Network and you see Trey Lance's first, you know, first preseason game, like, holy crap, Trey Lance looks good. And then I got to listen to you talking about Daniel Jones, he stinks, and then I watch Zach Wilson, and it's interception and blown out knee, and I'm like, ugh.
It's depressing.
It is depressing, and it's been enough. I've had enough of depressing football in New York, like, enough of it.
Well, I don't see it coming to an end anytime soon.
Ugh. The problem with the Giants is like, you keep saying that Tyrod Taylor is at some point going to replace Daniel Jones. But at that point, you'll have found out Daniel Jones isn't the guy. We need a quarterback. It does you no good to win football games at that point. None.
That's true. I agree with that point.
Because this is the year if you're going to be really bad and you need a quarterback, it feels like this is the year to be really bad and get your quarterback.
So Mike thinks the Giants can contend in this division if everything goes well.
He's very optimistic.
That's extremely optimistic.
Well, I mean, who knows what the hell the Commanders are going to be with Carson Wentz, right? I mean, everyone has a strong feeling about Carson Wentz. Eagles, I think a lot of people like the Eagles. And then you got Raymond's Cowboys, who are the most undisciplined team in the history of professional football. Right,
yeah,
Raymond?
I agree with that.
Because their head coach is just...
Everything is fine, though. Just listen to him.
Everything's good. It's only preseason, buddy.
Take out Carson Wentz's last game where they lost to the Jaguars. He wasn't that bad last year. He almost had that team in the playoffs.
Okay, but here's the problem, though.
People just don't like him.
Well, but that's the problem. It's more than just on the field. If it was going to work with... Like, Frank Reich came out and said, I put my neck on the line for this guy. And then you saw what they traded to get him. And then one year, had a pretty good year outside of the, you know, couple big moments late, which are, again, huge moments, and he wasn't good. And they were done with him. Like, it didn't sound like the owner even liked him.
Like, yeah, it doesn't sound like anybody likes him.
So, I mean, that's kind of like one of the things that is important with the starting quarterback, right? Is, like, he's a leader of the team and the guys want to play for him. That seems important to me.
Jones has had some moments. The Cowboys always screw things up. And I just think everybody's coronating the Eagles so far in this division. Yeah, they had a nice little finish last year, but somebody had to get the seventh playoff spot in the NFC last year. It happened to be the Eagles. They weren't that good.
Well, no, but the other thing too is that no one repeats as division champion in this, in the NFC East.
Well, the only guarantee is that the Giants never win it.
Okay, so the Cowboys won it last year, so it feels like, okay, the Eagles will win it this year, and then when you look at the NFC...
Washington, like, 2 years ago, yeah.
The NFC's not... I mean, the NFC's not great.
No, the NFC's not great.
And as Dave says, because Dave's... the AFC is loaded. It's his best take in the history of the show, of course. Outside of his Knicks take. RJ, do we have his Knicks take? I love his Knicks take. It's my favorite. This is... Pat, wait till you hear how strong this take is. This led the show. Come on, RJ.
He's fixing his hair.
Doesn't have to fix it. It's beautiful.
His hair looks good.
The Knicks are great. I love watching this team.
That was the take right there. Red hot. Red hot take.
I've been doing Knicks pre and post for 7 years now. I don't know if I've ever uttered those sentences before.
Oh, I wanted to ask you too, by the way. You got me so caught up in the Yankees and the Mets and everything else. Today, as we sit here on August 16th.
Yes.
Do the Knicks... Is Donovan Mitchell a Knick by the time the season tips off?
I say yes.
Wow. And we're keeping R.J. Barrett, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay. All right.
R.J. Barrett's here. I'm more confident that R.J. Barrett's a Knick than... It's not an either-or with Mitchell or Barrett. I don't think Utah wants Barrett.
I like that a lot.
I think it's a staring contest. This happens in the NBA a lot, right? You have the draft, then you have the free agency and the trade period. And then these guys got to take a little bit of time off because you go from like the season to the draft to the free agency. So they tried to get something done in that period of time, Danny Ainge and Leon Rose, and they couldn't. They're at a stalemate right now. So they both walked away. And then usually when you get to late August, early September, that's when the last pieces that need to be moved. Mitchell's got to be moved. They don't want to start the season with Mitchell on the Utah Jazz. And that's when the last pieces start to get moved. That's when Carmelo got traded, if you remember. It was the exact same thing. Remember when the Knicks finally got rid of Carmelo about five, 6 years ago, and he was going to Houston for forever, and they couldn't figure it out. And then they went away for the summer, and then they came back in September, and then all of a sudden he was on his way to Oklahoma City.
That was that Rudy Gobert trade, man. I mean, that screwed everything.
That screwed this, because that was just, that's not resetting the market. Danny Ainge, and he's trying to get as good a deal as he can for Utah. Danny Ainge is saying, well, the Rudy Gobert trade reset the market. Mitchell's better than Gobert, so you got to give me more than what Minnesota gave me for Gobert. What I would say, and what Leon Rose is probably saying, is no, Minnesota just made a stupid trade. Doesn't mean it should reset the market.
And this is the dude, I'm telling you right now, I would negotiate the CBA stuff with the NHLPA, and that was always the argument as to why we should have a salary cap. That was like one of their top arguments. Oh, listen, all it takes is one stupid owner to make one stupid deal. We can't trust everybody, so we got to have a salary cap just to make sure no one does anything dumb. It's like what Cleveland did with Deshaun Watson. Like, I mean, what do you think Baltimore was thinking when they saw that Deshaun Watson deal, knowing that Lamar Jackson was up next? Like, are you guys nuts?
Yeah.
Guy sits out a whole year, has all these cases coming up against him, and the first thing you do is trade for him and then sign him to $230
million. Largest guarantee in history. Unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness. So what do you think Lamar Jackson is saying?
Exactly.
Hey, this is where we're starting, guys.
It doesn't mean that every team has to do it the same way. It just meant that Cleveland did it that way.
Yeah, because Cleveland is Cleveland.
Cleveland is Cleveland.
You think he gets suspended?
That's a good take.
You think he gets suspended for the whole? You think they come back and give him a full year?
I think they do now to save face.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see.
They're
what
kind of on the record.
Well, I know they're on the record, but they also were on the record saying initially they wanted indefinite, and then it came out that they were negotiating before that ruling came out. And the NFL would do 12 plus an $8 million fine. I wonder if that's still on the table.
Kind of split the baby a little.
Yeah, you get double the six, and then plus they've been adamant that they want the money, too.
Well, because he's not, the way his contract is structured, he's going to lose like $300,000.
Yeah, he's only making
$30 million.
He's only making $1 million this year's salary.
Unbelievable what Cleveland did for him. Unbelievable. All right, let's bring in Ray for some three stars.
Today's three stars. Number three.
I'm going to go back to Cuddle, Marry, Trash. Great job by RJ, but I'm going to stick by what I said. I said what I said when I said that the state of New York is overrated. I'm proud to live in New Jersey, and that's for all the New Jersey listeners we have out there. So,
What are you, Popeye?
Yeah, I'm what I am.
I say what I say, and that's all that I say.
There you go.
Number two.
He's doubling down like Kevin Durant.
last week I roasted Joey Gallo on Friday, and maybe I was a little harsh on him, and somebody who probably misses him more than I do is Aaron Hicks right now, because he's probably taking all the brunt of all that criticism that was going Gallo's way from the fans. Rick gave his analysis of how Aaron Hicks is playing.
Can I ask you a quick question about Hicks before you hang up?
He stinks.
Number one.
You know who didn't stink, according to Mike Tannenbaum, and Pat has done the last two shows in for Dave. Thanks for filling in, Pat. But, you know, Mike Tannenbaum loves the style of the show now that Dave is not here. And, Rick, you kind of picked up the slack for Dave in one department. Here's a question you asked Mike Tannenbaum.
Let me ask you a question, though, Mike. So, I'm a Jets fan. You know that.
Ugh.
And the moves that Joe Douglas made during the offseason, his draft, all
this. Actually, I'm just going to let this down and let this play Joe Judge style, because
I was just setting it up.
Rick, you took 45 seconds to ask.
That was 45?
That was 45 seconds. Listen, it's still going. I'm watching.
No, it isn't.
I'm watching countdown. It's 20 seconds right now.
It seemed quick. Like, say Zach Wilson misses the first two or three weeks of the
season. Mike's got to go do get up.
Rush him. And for some reason, Joe Flacco steps in and is playing really well offensively.
10 seconds.
And they... one after
why,
3 weeks.
Why don't you say something to me while I'm
How
in the
do you handle
that?
Because, I mean, aren't you're still trying to prove to guys in that locker room that you're trying to win, and it's probably good for Coach Sala to win. How would you handle that?
Listen, we're not going to get in your ear. You were on a roll there.
Well, so, I got to take the rest of the week off. I have to take the rest of the week off.
We gave Dave a hard time for, what was that, 21-second question? This is you're more than doubled it.
Well, at least mine was a one-parter. Dave's was like a 25-part question.
This is very fair. You can't blame it on the fact that you had five different questions to answer, and so I will give you a little bit of credit for that. That being said, you know, maybe shorten the questions a little bit.
Oh, my God. It was like Homer's Odyssey, that question. It was terrible.
But I appreciate the effort.
I thought the number one star was going to be Mike Tannenbaum's new assessment of the show this week.
Sounds like you need an agent.
Mike T was an agent. Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that could happen.
Mike T's got he's got a wide skill set.
He's very comfortable. Says nasty things about the host, farts right on live radio. Very
big fan of Daniel
they
Jones.
Had 35 runs, 33 passes.
Oh, I love that. I love it.
Hey, it's been fun, man.
Hey, thanks for doing this, man. It's not easy waking up this early. We appreciate it.
God bless all you guys for doing it every day. And, you know, thanks for having me. I guess the big man will be back next week. Rick, it is Rule 76.
I'm going to slurp you right up there, Pat. No excuses, Blanket Champion. It's DPHRO O'Keefe and...
not Dave.
98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the DPHRO and Rothenberg podcast. Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker by asking it to play 98.7 ESPN.